All right, Shabbosai, good morning. Let's begin. I want to begin by thanking our sponsors for this morning, our Talmud Torah sponsors for Tishrei, Stephen Terry Zinn, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month in memory of their parents, Tzi Hirsch ben Yosef HaKoin, Yentl Mindel Bas David Halevi, Bonim Tzi ben Chaim, and Devorah Bas Yisrael Yoel. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an Aliyah and the families, a family in Nechama. And Bosi, with that, let us begin. So we have the great Tzchus, Emir Hashem, this morning to begin the fifth parak of Maseches Erevin, the parak of Ketzad Ma'arvin. So as you can have an incredibly beautiful daf ahead of us today. So let's begin with the Mishnah on Nun Beis Amud Beis 52b. Writes the Mishnah, Ketzad Ma'avrin Es Ha'arin. So now, remember, what we've established is that you have 2,000 Amos from the edge of the city. 2,000 Amos, that's your Tchum from the edge of the city. The Shaila, of course, becomes, how do you measure the edge of the city? So how do you go ahead and measure the Tchum? So Bayis Nichnos B'Dayis Yozi. So remember again, Bipashtus, you would say, well, you look at the last house on in the city, and you go ahead and you measure from there. But the problem is, what happens if the homes are not uniformly arranged around the edge of the city? So literally, again, one house juts out, one house is recessed, so how do you go ahead and measure it? Similarly, pogum nichnos, pogum yotze. So let's say you have like turrets or towers. So turrets or towers, again, some go in, some are recessed, some extend. Or hayu sham gidudios givos asar tvachem. We'll say again, we'll see what this means in the Gemara as well, but gidudios we're going to see are like mounds or ruins that are at least 10 tvachem high. So what's the halacha? U gisharim, tap of nun gimel, gisharim u nefashos sheishban beis dira. Or we'll say bridges or nefashos. Now this is actually very interesting. Rashi says over here, nefashos kein sha'osin al hakever. So we'll see exactly what this means. Either this means like a cemetery watchman's hut, or sometimes these larger crypts or tombs themselves had like a, for lack of a better term, like an apartment. You know, not for someone to be able to keep watch over there. So there's a base dira, there's some type of domicile in the bridge or in the tomb. So what's the halacha? Well, in all of these cases, motzien es hamida kinegdon, va'osin osa kimin tavla merubas, Kadeshihi Niskar es Azavius. So it's very interesting. What we do is we're measuring the tchum. What we do is we measure from the furthest point out. So for example, in the case, and we'll see all this more clearly in the Gemara, but in the case of where the homes, some extend out and some are recessed, we measure, we draw a line from the extended home, from the home that juts out. The towers or the turrets, some that are recessed, some that jut out, you draw the line from the one that extends out. If you have these ruins that are 10 tefachim high, and those are at the edge of the city, we measure the tchum from there. Now again, we'll discuss exactly how far out from the city can these ruins be and still be reckoned as part of the city. Same thing ultimately again with the bridges, and same thing ultimately again with the tombs. But halacha lemaisa, these things which are still considered to be part of the city, the tchum is ultimately measured from there. I will say, but the chiddush over here is that if you do not have a clearly aligned border of the city, but rather you have some things that jut out and some things that are recessed, we measure from the parts that jut out, giving you the maximum tchum. Now, not only that, but what we do is, so if you can imagine this, the easy way to illustrate this is like with homes. So let's say again, you have the edge of the city, some homes that jut out, some homes that are recessed. I'm going to measure the tchum line from the home that juts out. What I'm going to do is I'm going to draw my imaginary line across from that home that juts out. So the tchum line will ultimately again be measured from the home that extends out, furthest from the city. And then ultimately the Gemara says, we already established this in yesterday's daf, or 2 days ago, which is in Machlokes, how do you measure tchum? Do you look at tchum as a circle, or do you look at tchum as a square? Here, once again, the Mishnah confirms the idea that we measure the tchum as a square. So what we'll do is we'll identify the homes, the turrets, the ruins that extend the most from the city. We'll draw our line across, and we'll do that on each side of the city until we create ultimately a square tchum around the city. Why square as opposed to circle? So again, that's obvious already for us, because again, the beauty of the square is that you benefit from the corners as well. Good. So we'll say, this is a very important halacha. Very important halacha because rarely would you ever have a city where ultimately the edges or the borders of the city are exactly aligned. Inevitably. Again, unless you have even a walled city, but even a walled city. So again, therefore, halacha lamaisa, we measure from the part which extends most, draw our imaginary line from there. Says the Gemara. So we'll say, so now, okay, that's the halacha in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara is going to get into some syntax. Says the Gemara, Rav Shmuel, Chad Tani Ma'avrin, V'chad Tani Ma'avrin. So both say, so the Shaila is, how is the word Ma'avrin, how should it be written in the Mishnah? Should it be written with an Ayin or an Aleph? So two different versions, Rav and Shmuel had. One had it as Ma'avrin with an Ayin, one had it as Ma'avrin with an Aleph. Man de Tani Ma'avrin, Aver. So the opinion that said Ma'avrin with an Aleph, from Lashon Aver, from Lashon of a limb, that just like the limb extends, look at Rashi, Aver, Shemosifin La'ivarim, that literally we add limbs onto the city. Shem Yesh Aver, Sheyotzi Minayir, Bekaren Mizrachis, Teromis, Roin Kilo Aver, Gam Bekaren Mizrachis, Tsefonis, Modim Shem. So we'll say, what it means is, if you can imagine, the home that juts out, right, is like a limb that extends. So once you have one limb that extends, we then draw another limb across the face of that city corresponding to that home which juts out. So Ma'avrin is Lashon Eiver, a Lashon of a limb. Uman detani Ma'avrin, Ki'isha Ubra. And I will say the opinion that says that it's Ma'avrin with an Ayin, from Lashon Ubra, like pregnant. Just like a pregnant woman, her stomach extends, so to the tchum of the city extends. And also remember, we measure the tchum of the city from the part of the city which extends the most. Good. So Marasa Machpela, supposed to listen to this. So now, once the Gemara, so first of all, so now that we recorded a Machlokis Rav and Shmuel, we're going to record a couple of other Machloksim Rav and Shmuel. And we're going to see that some of these Machloksim depend also on spelling of words, as well as definition of words. So Marasa Machpela. So we'll say, what do I say? Now remember, Marasa Machpela, we know it well, purchased by Avram Avinu, from Ephron Hachiti. So what does it mean, Marasa Machpela? Rav Ushmuel, Chad Amar, Shnei Batim, Zelef Nimizeh. So we'll say, one opinion said, the Marasa Machpela was actually two structures, one inside of the other. One inside of the other. Rashi actually has a picture of this. You would walk into the Ma'ara, there'd be an entranceway to the Ma'ara, and ultimately there'd be an outer area, and then an inner area. You'd walk through the outer area to get into the more recessed cave. Shnei batim zelef nimizeh. V'chad amar bayis va'aliyah gabav. One said, no. Marasa Machpela was an upper structure and a subterranean structure, right? One structure at ground level, and then another structure below. So the Gemara Salaman, Damar Zal Gavzeh. So according to the opinion that says, the Marasa Machpela was two structures, one on top of the other, Hainu Machpela. So we'll say, then it makes sense, Machpela means doubled. So if you could imagine, again, if it's one structure on top of the other, then it makes sense that it's doubled. But according to the opinion, the Sefer will say that it's really just two rooms, kind of one in front of the other. My Machpela. So we'll say, in other words, the Lashon of doubled, of kafel, makes much more sense if you're talking about an upper structure and a lower structure. Ground structure, subterranean structure, or which is structure area, right? But if you're going to say is bayis zelif nimizeh, that there's an outer area and an inner area, so we'll say that's the picture in Rashi. You walk in, there's room one, and then behind it is room two. What's the lashon of Machpela? To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you, that's not a reference to the grave, to the cave, but rather it's a reference to who's buried there. Shekfula bezugos, that it got its name Marasa Machpela, because ultimately, again, there were couples who were buried there. Because we'll say, now again, interestingly enough, you'll see it yourself, but the problem with that approach is, after all, that halacha lemaisa, Avram Avinu bought it from Ephron. It was called Machpela, right? It was called the Stei Machpela, even before he went ahead and he bought it. So remember, again, according to, as we're going to see, the Masorah is that Adam and Chava were buried there. And it could very well be that maybe Ephron knew that, or whoever named the area knew that. And therefore, again, it's already called Machpela. But of course, the name also foreshadows the future, that there are going to be many couples who are buried there. Mamre Kiryas Arba. So it calls it Mamre Kiryas Arba. Why Kiryas Arba? Amar Yitzchak. Kiryas Ha'arba, it is the Kirya, the city, or the domicile of the four. What's the four? So the Gemara says Arba Zugos, the four couples who were buried there. Adam v'Chava, Avram v'Sara, Yitzchak v'Rivka, Yaakov v'Leah. So we'll say ultimately again, that's where it cleans these things. Remember, this helps us to understand both Maras HaMachpelah, so Kafel, because the Zugos, the couples are buried there, and also Kiryas Arba, the ultimately again, the Kiryah, the city of the four, the area of the four, a reference to the four couples buried there. Vahibi me Amrafel. So we'll say, so the Pasuk says, The it was in the days of Amraphel. We'll say this is when the Torah introduces in Bereishis the story of the war of the four kings against the five. So we'll say who is Amraphel? So Rav Shmuel Chadamar Nimrod Shmo. One say it was Nimrod. So if it was Nimrod, Lama Nikra Shmo Amraphel. So why is he called Amraphel? Or if that's his name, Nimrod, so why is he called Amraphel? Shene Gemara says Sha'amar Vihipia La Avram Avinu Besoch Kiv Shanaish. Because we also remember again, he's called Amraphel because it's a contraction. Amar v'hipil, because he gave the order to throw Avram Avinu into the fiery furnace. So we'll say, so remember again, this is a reference to the story that's contained in Bereishis Rabbah, the famous story where ultimately again Avram Avinu's father Terach leaves him in charge of the idol shop. Avram Avinu goes ahead and smashes the idol. You know the story. Places the rod or places the staff in the hand of the big idol. Terach comes back, says, "Nu, what happened?" Avram Avinu says, "It's crazy. They got into a fight and the big idol smashed all of the small idols." Terach said, "That's ridiculous. That can't happen." And Avram Avinu says, "Exactly. So why do you worship these things which you know are so powerless?" Terach was incensed, Terach was upset, brings Avram Avinu for judgment before Nimrod. Nimrod says to Avram, "You can either renounce your heretical views of this one God thing and embrace idolatry, or you're going into the fiery furnace." Throws him into the fiery furnace. So Avram won't renounce, throws him into the fiery furnace, and of course, Avram Avinu is saved. So the Gemara says his name was Nimrod, but he's called Amraphel, ultimately again, Amar Vihipil, because he gave the command ultimately to go ahead and throw Avram Avinu into the Kiv Shanaish. V'chad Amar, the other opinion said, V'chad Amar, Amra fel Shmo, V'lama nikra Shmo. Is there something wrong with the Zoom feed? I see it, my video is, you got it?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I thought you were coming to give me a hug. I got, Gemara says as follows, V'chad Amar, Amra fel Shmo, V'lama nikra Shmo Nimrod. Why was he called Nimrod? Shehimrid es kala olam kula b'malchuso. So we'll say in this version, ultimately again, he's called Nimrod. Why? Because he led the entire world. Thank you. He led the entire world in a rebellion against Hakadosh Baruch Hu. So Himrid es kala olam kula. He led the entire world in a rebellion against Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Bevayaka melech hadash. So again, we're just going through a whole bunch of machlokesim, Rav and Shmuel. So that they're not thematically related. Just they're all the same machlokes, Rav and Shmuel. So here we go. Bevayaka melech hadash. A new king rose up on Egypt. Rav Shmuel, chad amar chadash mamish, v'chad amar shenis chachu gzerosav. So I'll say, interestingly enough, machlokes, what kind of new king was this? So one opinion said, mamish a new king, a new paro, v'chad amar shenis chachu gzerosav. And the other opinion said, no, same pharaoh, just ultimately, again, new decrees. Man the Amar Chadash Mamish, the opinion who said that it was Mamish a new king, Dichsev Chadash. The Pasuk did say Chadash. Uman the Amar Shinis Chachu Gzerosav, Midloksiv Vayamas Vayimloch. So we'll say the Pasuk, the Torah never says that the previous Pharaoh died. So the fact that the Torah never says that the previous Pharaoh died and the new Pharaoh was carnated in his place would seem to indicate to us that it is the same Pharaoh. I will amam damrish and it's chachuk zerosav. We'll say first wide line in Gimel Amdalef. According to the opinion, it says same Pharaoh, but new rules. Hak siv asher lo yada es Yosef. The pasuk does say that the new Pharaoh didn't know Yosef. May asher lo yada es Yosef. Da havadami kiman de lo yada le li Yosef klal. So we'll say, according to that opinion, it's not that he didn't know Yosef, it's that he made himself as if he did not know Yosef at all. Okay, we'll say, incredible. So all these machloksim, Rav and Shmuel, all begins ultimately again with it. Just so you understand the progression, it began with our Mishnah of trying to understand ma'avrin. Is it an ayin or is it an aleph? Machlokes Rav and Shmuel. Once we get to that, we discuss all these other incredible machloksim. The Gemara goes weiter. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Yud Ches Yamim Gidalti Eitz Raboshia Beribi. Rabbi Yochanan says, so it's 18 days I spent with Raboshia Beribi. And I only learned one thing from him. One thing from him. And that one thing was regarding our Mishnah. Ketzad me'avrin es ha'arim ba'alif. So Rabbi Yochanan says, the one thing I learned from Rav Hoshea for the 18 days that I spent with him was that the way to read the Mishnah is ar is me'avrin with an aleph. Lashon ever. Lashon ever. Creating a limb. Creating a limb, ini, shabosei. So now, interestingly enough, the Gemara says, fine, no problem with the Aleph. What we do have a problem with is, Rabbi Yochanan, you spent 18 days with Rav Hoshea, and all you learned was that? All you learned was that? 18 days with the Gadol Hadar, and all you learned was that the Ma'avrin in the Mishnah is an Aleph? That's the totality of what you learned? Ini vama Rabbi Yochanan, yud beis talmidim hayilol Rav Hoshea baribi. Rav Hoshea baribi had 12 talmidim. So let's listen to this. So Rabbi Yochanan said, you know, that Rav Hoshea Beribi had 12 students, and I spent 18 days with them, and during those 18 days, I learned, literally, Lamadati Lev Kol Echad Ve'echad. I learned the heart of each of them, and I learned the wisdom of each of them. In other words, we'll say, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Lev Kol Echad Ve'echad, Kama Hayah Mechudad, Klamar Bekulan Hikarti, Macharifos Yesh Zemizeh. I learned, I saw their sharpness, I saw their wit, I saw their heart. So we'll say, the Gemara says, I don't understand. Leif kol echad ve'echad v'chachmas kol echad ve'echad gamar gemara lo gamar Rabbi Yochanan. So you spent 18 days with them. It's very beautiful that you realized their heart and you realized the depth of their wisdom. But did you not learn any gemara, or didn't you learn any Torah? To which the Gemara says, "Ibei sema minayhu di do gamar minay di de lo gamar." So we'll say, what the Gemara is just astounded by is how is it that Rabbi Yochanan could spend 18 days with Rav Hoshea and his 12 Talmidim, and it doesn't appear that he learned anything substantive. To which the Gemara says, no. During the 18 days, he learned much from Rav Hoshea's students, but didn't have an opportunity really to learn one-on-one with Rav Hoshea himself. The only halacha he got from Rav Hoshea himself was what? Was that it's ma'avrin with an aleph, v'ibay seima, davar echad b'mishnah seinu kamer. No. V'osei b'imedayik, what did Rabbi Yochanan say? I spent 18 days with Rav Hoshea. I spent 18 days with Rav Hoshea, and I learned one thing regarding our Mishnah. Otherwise, Rav Hoshea said, he's not saying I learned one thing. He's saying I learned many things. But amongst the many things that I learned, there was one thing regarding our Mishnah. And what was the one thing regarding our Mishnah? That it's Ma'avrin with an Aleph. Ma'avrin with an Aleph. Good. Vam Rabbi Yochanan. We'll say Nun Gimel Amad Aleph about 8 lines into the wide lines. Vam Rabbi Yochanan, Kishayinu Lomdin Torah. This is so beautiful. Kishayinu Lomdin Torah Eitz Rav Hoshea. So as I continue this, now that we established that, interestingly enough, it turns out that Rabbi Yochanan apparently really only spent 18 days by Rav Hoshea. That was it. Those 18 days were obviously very meaningful because he speaks about them a lot. See, so when we used to learn Torah by Rav Hoshea, listen to this. Hayinu Yoshvim Arba Arba Ba'ama. We would sit 4 Talmidim to an Amma. Amr Rebbe said, Kesheinu Lomdin Torah Eitz Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, Hayinu Yoshvim Shisha Shisha Ba'ama. We would sit 6 Talmidim to an Amma. Now the truth is, remember, so that, whether or not, remember, an Amma is a foot and a half. So squeezing four people, or squeezing 6 people into that is good. I will say, so first of all, just so you understand, isn't it incredible how much, you know, we would have learned this Gemara, you know, 8 months ago, you would have said, interesting. Now, right, I would say, look how much our world has changed. 4 people in an Amma, you know what you call that today? A super spreader event, right? That's just like, let's say, it's just, isn't it fascinating, like, how much the world has changed in such a short amount of time? In other words, we've seen Gemaras like that before, of the Talmidim crowding together to hear the Rebbe. And Meretz Hashem, we'll be able to get back to those times when we're able to be close to each other again, but it's really incredible. We'll say it's also incredible because what does this mean? Now, the Maharshal points out that this is probably a bit hyperbolic. It doesn't literally mean that they're squeezing four people to an Amma, six people to an Amma. We'll say what it means is that when you find people who are dedicated to the same lofty and spiritual goals, so they're able to work together as one harmonious unit. It's almost like when the Mishnah speaks about the 10 miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. So remember again, the last of the 10 miracles was that a person said, "V'lo amar adam tsarli hamakom sha'alin b'Yerushalayim." The Rabbis say that a person never said there's not enough space in Yerushalayim. The Rabbeinu Yonah comments, Rashi's comments, that's a reference to the Aliyah of the Regal. When the Jews, very apropos for Sukkis, when the Jews would come up to Eretz Yisrael, Halavai will be Zochem, Eretz Hashem. When they would come for Sukkis, or they would come for Yom Tov, for the Regalim, obviously you have all of Klal Yisrael converging on one city. It shouldn't be enough space for everybody, but one of the miracles was that no one ever said it's too tight here. It's not enough space. So the Chassam Sofer comments on this, and he says something amazing. He says, it doesn't mean... So many of the commentaries understand that there was some type of miracle that somehow Yerushalayim expanded, kind of the same way that the Mishnah said a little bit earlier. We spoke of this on Erev Yom Kippur, right? Omdim tzufufim mishtachavim rivachim, right? When they would stand, they were packed like sardines, and then when they would bow down, there'd be room for everyone. So there was a miracle that the Beis HaMikdash somehow expanded. So the Chassam Sofer says, everyone thinks that this is a miracle that Yerushalayim expanded. He said, that's not what happened. Yerushalayim did not expand. It's just that when you're with a group of people and dedicated to the same spiritual lofty goals, you could share the same space. You could occupy the same space. See, they both say, a lot of times I'm makbin on my space because I'm here, you're there. And the truth is, we're not the same. We're not on the same page. We're not dedicated to the same goals, same aspirations. So you've got to have your makam. I've got to have my makam. I've often thought that this is, like they both say, such an incredible musr in social distancing, that the Rebbe Shlomo is teaching us how we have to learn how to occupy the same space. We're clearly, anyone who watched the debate clearly learned that we have not learned that lesson. But Lamaisa, that's what's happening over here. We have to learn how to occupy the same space. So the Rebbe Shlomo is teaching us what it means not to occupy the same space. That was the miracle in Yerushalayim. You could be on top of each other. You could literally be teaming with people. But at the end of the day, if you're dedicated to the same goals, to the same Avodas Hashem, to the same Nitzchus of Klal Yisrael, you know, it's okay. There's enough room for everyone. You know, it's kind of like, we have to go on. It's kind of like, if you ever have b'schus to go to the Shuk on Erev Shabbos, right, to go to Machane Yehuda on Erev Shabbos, we'll say, objectively, it's a disaster. It's a disaster. But yet, somehow, when you see a marketplace teeming with people for Erev Shabbos, and this one's yelling, and this one's handling, and this one's this, it's incredible. It's incredible. Why isn't it bothersome? On a Tuesday, it might be a little bit annoying. So on Erev Shabbos, when you see that frenetic pace of activity for Shabbos, everyone's on the same page. That's the goal. If we could just get together and move together and grow together, then it's okay if we're a little bit on top of each other. Lo amar adam sradi amakum. Incredible. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yoshia Rebbe Bedoro, Kremer Bedoro. Rabbi Yochanan said that Rabbi Yoshia Beribi. Bosir Rashi points out, Beribi is like is a term of covet, like the Rav, right? Beribi. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yoshia in his generation was like Rabbi Meir in his generation. Mar Rabbi Meir Bedoro lo yochlu chaver v'lamar osav daito. Just like Rabbi Meir's generation, his colleagues could not fathom the depth of his greatness. So Rabbi Yoshia, his colleagues cannot go ahead and really fathom the depth of his greatness. But say this, by the way, this Gemara is also very profound. What it also teaches us is sometimes we do not recognize the greatness of people while they are alive. Right, that's what it means, that his friends couldn't, which is human nature, we don't always appreciate who people really are while they're in this world. Rav Kook actually says, Rav Arbin Yisrael Kohen Kook, Zeru Tzadik Livracha, says that's the pshat, in Misas Tzadikim Mechaprin. That why is it the death of the righteous atone? It doesn't even sound like such a Jewish concept. Right? So we'll say what it is because sometimes it's only when righteous people die that we understand who they were, we understand what they were, we understand the life that they lived, and then we could truly begin to emulate them. That's the kapara. So the Gemara says, so these people were great, but even their chaverim, even their closest friends, didn't really know who they were. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Liban Shal Rishonim Kipischo Shel Ulam. Listen to this beautiful idea. Rabbi Yochanan says the heart of the Rabbanim, of the great tzaddikim of the earlier generations, was as expansive as the opening of the Ulam. Shalachronim Kipischo Shel Heichal. The latter generations, the opening of their heart was like the Heichal was, which was a smaller opening. So the idea is speaking of the expansiveness. So the spiritual expansiveness of earlier generations was like the entranceway of the ulam, a large opening, right? Rashi says 20 ames, right? 20 amos tall. The heart of the latter generations was like, you know, the opening of the heichal, 10 ames tall. So the Gemara says va'anu and us kemali nekev machat sidkis, and we are like the expansiveness of our heart is like the eye of a sewing needle. Which I will say, it's a scary statement, right? Can you imagine that if Rabbi Yochanan is saying this about his generation? Okay, Gemara says, fine. Who are the Rishonim? Rishonim Rabbi Akiva. The earlier generations will say it's Rabbi Akiva. Achronim Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua. Ikedami Rishonim Lazar ben Shamua. Others say, no, the earlier generations are Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua. Achronim Rabbi Oshia Baribi. And the later generations are Rabbi Oshia Baribi. Va'anu Kimali Nekev Machav Sidkis. And again, we are by us, the expansiveness and openness of our heart ultimately, again, is like the eye of a sewing needle. We'll say ultimately again, this expansiveness of Osai is also a fascinating idea, because what does it mean? It could be just pshat in terms of knowledge. It could also, I will say, be like a certain openness of mind, right? An expansiveness. And in fact, it's interesting. We don't have time for it now, but it is fascinating to see the examples that the Gemara chooses. The fact that it chooses, for example, Rabbi Akiva. I will say, remember again, Rabbi Akiva's entire essence was v'yahavta l're'acha kamocha. V'yizakla gadol bator. Rabbi Akiva, I will say, to live a life like that means an acceptance of every person. A mamish, an acceptance, not just an acceptance, but an appreciation of every person, that just because someone's not like you, doesn't believe like you, doesn't practice like you, doesn't act like you, doesn't look like you, does not automatically mean that they're not as great as you. Listen, that's also expansiveness. See, Judaism never defined greatness by knowledge. For one simple reason, you could be a rotten person and be exceptionally smart and amass a great amount of knowledge. Tzidkus, part of tzidkus is knowledge, but sort of tzidkus is also what the Gemara calls this rachba slave, right? What's the lashon? Right? Libo shorishon kepischo shal ulam, an expansiveness of the heart. An expansiveness of the heart means a love for the other, an acceptance for the other, a real feeling of achrayus for the other. The Gemara goes right there. Amar Abaye va'anan ki sichsa beguda legamra. And Abaye says, Rosh, look at Rashi, sichsa beguda legamra, ki yasei chenoats in osa bekosel, benekev tzar v'nichras v'docha. We are like a peg that is driven into the wall. So we'll say, you can drive a peg into the wall, but what's the problem? It requires a lot of force. So as well say, ultimately, again, in order to get Torah into us, and I will say we're switching gears a little bit, because what Abai is saying now is the ability for spirituality to go ahead and permeate our soul is kind of like getting a peg into the wall. Can you get a peg into the wall? Yes, but you have to hammer it. You have to hammer it, says the Gemara. See, Rashi says over here, "Besichsa begudu legamra ki yasei chenoatz in oso bekosal benekev tzar v'nichnas bedochak kach ein yicholin anu lahavin masha anu shomim kim ma'atu bekoshi." So we'll say, so the Gemara says over here, we are able to hear things, but it's difficult for us to understand, difficult for us to retain. Like getting a peg into the wall. Amar Abaye, so fine. Amar Rava va'anon ki etzba asa bekir l'savra, l'svara. So ultimately, again, Rava said, we are like putting a hand into wax when it comes to acquiring svara. We'll say, what does that mean? So the Gemara says over here, if you have dried wax, hardened wax, you keep poking your finger on it, so really it takes a very long time to make an indentation. So ultimately, again, the same way Rabbi Yehuda says, sometimes it's difficult for us to understand things like it is for a finger to penetrate wax. Amar Ravashi, Anan, Kietzba Asa Babir L'Shechab. Ravashi says, it is as easy for us to forget as it is to put a finger into a barrel. So I say, so again, or into a pit, I should say. So just like, again, there's no effort extended into putting a finger into a pit, we easily forget things as well. Amar Rav Yehuda, also listen to this. Incredible Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Bnei Yehuda Shikpidu Al Lashonam Niskayma Torasam Biyadam. The Jews of Yehuda, Jews of Yehuda, the tribal area of Yehuda, both say because they were careful with the way they spoke, they retained their Torah knowledge. B'nei Galil, Shaloik Pidu al-Sharon, they were not careful the way they spoke. Lonis Kaima Torah Sabiyadam, they did not retain their Torah knowledge. So we'll say, look at Rashi, just, what does it mean? Hik Pidu al-Sharonam, Ledaber Beloshon Sach, Velo Beloshon Meguna, Kidarmina Lekaman, B'nei Galil. Both say, do you hear this Gemara? Do you hear this incredibly dramatic Gemara? The Jews of Yehuda, because they were careful with the way they spoke nicely, they spoke pleasantly. Therefore, they retained their Torah. The Jews of the Galil did not speak pleasantly. They spoke more coarsely. They spoke, I guess, in a little bit of a harsher way. Therefore, they did not retain their Torah. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Mi di bikpei de talya milsa? What does retention of Torah have to do with speaking nicely? Ella b'nei Yehuda d'daiki lishna umas nechili simna. There's kama Torah sabiyadon. B'nei Galil d'lo daiki lishni v'lo mis nechili hu simna. Lo nis kama Torah sabiyadon. So both says, the Gemara therefore switches gears. The Gemara says, no. What it means when it says that ekpidu al lashonim, it means about how they recorded halachic rulings. B'nei Yehuda were very careful to maintain original wording of teachings which were conveyed. They also create symbols to remember things with. So because they were careful of preservation of original wording, halacha lemaisa, so they went ahead and they were able to retain their learning. B'nai Galil were not so careful in preserving original wording, nor did they create symbols to remember things, and therefore halacha lemaisa, they forgot stuff. So the Gemara says, B'nai Yehuda gamru, so both say, the Gemara says, B'nai Yehuda gamru mechad rabo, neskamu terasan, furthermore, we'll say, B'nai Yehuda, interestingly, they were makbid, that a person should get a Rebbe. That's my Rebbe. So I learned my Torah from my Rebbe. And therefore, Rabbi said, when you learn your primary Torah from one person, it just creates a certain clarity. In the Galil, they had multiple Rebbeim, and therefore, Lonis Kamatras Beyadim. So we'll say, when it's Lonis Kamatras Beyadim, it just means their teachings weren't as clear, which makes sense, right? If you have a lot of different Rebbeim, a lot of different opinions, so then Halacha Lamaisa, it's hard to kind of hold cup as to who says what. So in Galil, which Rabbi said, again, I want to be clear. It's not like in Galilee they were doing anything wrong. In other words, we have plenty of examples of people who have multiple Rebbeim. But in Yehuda, they were makbid, asei l'charav, choose for yourself a Rebbe, go with that Rebbe, remember his teachings, and then you have clarity. Ravina Rabbeinu Yehuda, de galu mesechta, neskam tera sambiyadon. B'nei Galil, de lo galu mesechta, lo neskam tera sambiyadon. Both say, this is incredible. What does galu mesechta mean? Look at four lines up from the bottom in Rashi. Lamdu la'achirim kach shamati. They both say, isn't this incredible? So Rashi says, it means they taught. In B'nai Yehuda, they taught others what they learned. In the Galil, they didn't teach others what they learned. When you take your Torah and you share it with others, that Torah is cemented as yours. When you take your Torah and you keep it for yourself, you are not able to retain or hold on to that Torah as well. Now, Rashi gives another explanation. Others say, Rabbi say that what it means is, Galu Mesechta means to reveal the deeper meaning. In other words, that in B'nai Yehuda, they chazered and chazered and chazered, they reviewed and reviewed and reviewed until they really understood things with total clarity. In the Galil, they were not as careful with that. So the Gemara says as follows, David, Gali Mesechta. Shaul, Gali Mesechta. David shared his Torah with others. Shaul, unfortunately, did not share his Torah with others. David, Gali Mesechta, Ksiv Bey. So David HaMelech, who taught his Torah to others, says, Yireecha Yireuni, V'yismichu Biki L'dvarcha Yichalti. So the Gemara says, Shaul, Dolo Gali Mesechta, Ksiv Bey. Ksiv Bey, because over here, the Pasuk that says, So we'll say over here what it's talking about is as follows. So the Gemara is understanding these two psukim by David HaMelech when he delivered halachic rulings. His halachic rulings were correct and clear. Shaul, unfortunately, when he delivered his halachic rulings, they were not as clear. So we'll say, so it happens to be, by the way, to a certain degree, the two pshatim of Rashi are linked. Because when do you often acquire a greater clarity of the material you are learning? When you teach it. Hey, Shabbos, we all know this, right? If I have to learn something for myself, that's one thing. But I have to learn something and give it over. So the need to give it over forces me to clarify my understanding of something. So David HaMelech, who shared his Torah with others, ultimately, again, had clarity, and therefore his halachic rulings were correct. Shaul, who did not share his Torah with others, ultimately did not have clarity, and therefore his halachic rulings, the Gemara says, were incorrect. Amud Beis, Vam Rabbi Yochanan, Minayin Shemacha Lo LaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Osa Avad. We'll say, by the way, I'll just point out that there is a Pashat Pshat to understanding Rabbi Huda's name in the name of Rav, namely, because let's remember again, Rabbi Huda called the name of Rav, that in Bnei in Yehuda, they were makbid on the way they spoke, and therefore they retained their Torah. In the Galil, they were not makbid on the way they spoke, and therefore they did not retain the Torah. So we'll see, Ayin Sham, the Amunah minutes from yesterday, I spoke about this concept. What I think is that Pashat Pshat in this Gemara. So it's 6 minutes. I'm going to save the 6 minutes here. You'll take the 6 minutes there. Says the Gemara as follows. How do we know, says the Gemara, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave Shaul for that sin? Now, which sin is this referring to? So we'll say, Shaul murdered Nov, the city of Kanim. Right? Well, he ordered the murder of Nov. Remember, again, I will say, this is the dramatic story where David HaMelech is... Well, I'm not going to get into it all. Point is, Shaul made the assumption, based on Doeg HaDomi's erroneous advice, that Nov had helped David HaMelech, David escape. Now remember, David in fact kind of pulled, he didn't tell anything to Nov what was going to happen. He told the people of Nov that he was on a mission from the king. So they gave him food and weapons. Shaul took it to mean that they were siding with David in a revolt against the crown. He orders the murder of Nov. So the Gemara says, how do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave Shaul for the murder of Nov? Shene'emar, Machar ato banecha imi. Because we'll say, when Shaul hears about his death, that he's going to die in the war with the Plishtim, so the message that comes back is, Shaul, tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. Imi b'mechitzasi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Shaul, you will be with me within my mechitz. In other words, that when you die and you go to Olam Haba, you will be with me. Am Rabbi Abba, i'ika demashil lehu lebnei Yehuda, dedaik lishani. So let's listen to this. So now the Gemara jumps back for a second. So Rabbi Abba says, if anyone happens to... So now that we've established that the Jews of Yehuda, right, Jews of Yehuda, are very careful with their wording, right? So if that's the case, they're careful with their wording. By the way, if somebody has a chance to ask them, ma'avrin tanan, o ma'avrin tanan, akuzu tanan, o akuzu tanan. So we'll say, now that we know they're ma'avrin, let's go all the way back. Remember again, we have a wording issue. Is it ma'avrin in the Mishnah with an aleph or an ayin? Just has to be Yehuda or we'll say akuzu or akuzu. We'll say so akuzu or akuzu. We'll say, refers to a particular testicular mum in an animal, right? So we'll say so. This is where I don't know what the technical term is, but it's where they're not sure if there are two testicles or one. There's a possibility that there are two, but one of them is up. I forgot what is it? Undescended. So we'll say, so that's what's called akuzu. Akuzu. So the Gemara says, is it akuzu with an aleph? Is it akuzu with an ayin? So if anyone happens to find Bnei Yehuda, ask. So says the Gemara. Varmila ika detani ma'avrin, ve'ika detani ma'avrin. Ika detani akuzu, ve'ika detani akuzu. So listen to this. So they ask Bnei Yehuda, what did Bnei Yehuda answer? Oh, good question. There are some that say ma'avrin with an aleph. Some that say ma'avin with an ayin. Some that say akuzu with an aleph. Some that say akuzu with an ayin. So we'll say, interestingly enough, what they're telling Bnei Yehuda is it's just two different versions. It's just two different versions of the Mishnah. Again, the good news is it doesn't impact the meaning, right? The meaning is the meaning. Two different versions, two different spellings, both are correct. So the Gemara says, just by the way, Bnei Yehuda didaki lishna mahi. Can you give an example of the way that Bnei Yehuda were careful with their words? I will say, now here's what's interesting. The Gemara is understanding this statement that Bnei Yehuda daiki lishna, that Bnei Yehuda are careful with their words, not just talking about learning. So you will say, on Amud Aleph, when we were speaking about this, it was hikpidu al lishonim, and therefore niskama Torah biyadam. So we were understanding ultimately that Bnei Yehuda were careful with their words, therefore they retained their learning. So the original statement was made vis-a-vis recording teachings in their original form, creating of symbols for remembering things. But now the Gemara understands it in a much more expansive way, namely that Bnei Yehuda in general were just careful with the way they spoke. They were careful with their words. So what's an example of it? We'll say it's very interesting. Mahi. So we'll say it's fascinating. Dahu bar Yehuda, da amar lahu, talis yesh li limkar. So we'll say it gives an example. There was a guy from Yehuda who had a cloak to sell. Amar amrulei, my gavan talischa. They said to him, what is the color of your talis? Amar lahu kitshadin ale adama. It's like a leaf, it's like a beet when it's in the ground. It's like a beet when it's in the ground. So we'll say, so what is that? What does it mean, a beet when it's in the ground? A beet when it's in the ground is green. What's green? The beet has a leaf that comes out of the ground. That leaf is green. So he's saying ultimately again that the cloak is green. Why don't you just say that the cloak is green? And we'll say, how do we say green in Talmudic jargon? Right? Yarak. Right? What's the problem with yarak? Yarak? Yarak can mean yellow or green. I will say this is very in Yoni Dioma, because there's a big machlokes as to what is the most mohudr type of esrik, right? Is the most mohudr type of esrik a strong yellow, a strong green? It's a machlokes. Why? Because what does yarak mean? So I will say this is interesting. So he could have just said yarak, but what he said yarak, that would not have been clear. So instead what he says is, It's like essentially the leaves of the beet when it's in the ground, which everybody understands is green. So what do you see from me? Like, so what's the maila? The maila, Rabbi will say, is being careful with one's words and being specific with one's words. Say what you mean. Don't leave any ambiguity in your words and measure your words carefully. You know, Rav Pam, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was Rav Shiva of Tar Vadasa. Do you know what the worst word in the English language is? The worst word. Don't get nervous. Right? The worst word is whatchamacallit. Worst word is whatchamacallit. Why? Because if you don't know what you want to say, then don't say anything. Wait till you have the power of recall for the word. Decide what word you want to use and then articulate it. But if you're saying the word whatchamacallit, then at the end of the day, you have not fully thought through what it is that you want to say. And most of we all know this, because over the course of time, we've all gotten ourselves into trouble by saying things that are a bit half-baked, right? Or things that really I just did not fully think through. So therefore, B'nai Yehudra Bosai, this wasn't just a din in their learning. This was just a din in how they spoke. So the Gemara says, B'nai Galil, delo daiki lishnamai. So let's give an example. We'll say, what happened in B'nai Galil? This is great. What happened in the Jews of Galil, who weren't as careful, didn't really think through their words as much. Desanya, listen to this. Dahu bar Galila, dava ka'azil. There was a guy, ultimately, again, who was traveling. Va'amar lehu, amar leman, amar leman. And he said, who has an amar? Who has an amar? Who has an amar? Amar le galila shota. They said, you fool, what are you talking about? Because he kept saying, amar, 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 amar. Who has an amar to sell me? He said, what's an amar? Do you mean a chamar, lemerkav, a donkey to ride? Oh, chamar le mishte? Or do you mean chamar, wine to drink? Amar le milbisha, wool to wear? O imer lis kasa, or a sheep to slaughter. So we'll say, so the guy's saying, I want to buy an amar, and they don't understand what he's saying. Wine, donkey, wool, sheep, what do you want? So we'll say, so ultimately be specific. And I will say, there's an incredible muster in this as well. You see, if you can't fully articulate what you want out of life, you are not going to get it. We'll say, it's an incredible yisod, because sometimes in life, we're not really able to articulate a mission statement. What do I want out of life? What do I want to accomplish? Who do I want to be? Well, if you can't articulate or clearly what you want out of life, you are not going to get it. Ha'hi Issa, I will say, is a great story. He Issa, to buy the name of the Chavrit, I will say, this is great. There was a woman who wanted to say to her friend, Tai d'uchleich chalva, come and join me to eat some fat. Right, schmaltz. She had some schmaltz. Right, this was before the time that trans fat was problematic. So she has some good old schmaltz. So she wanted to invite her friend over to go ahead and share in some schmaltz. So what happened? So she was apparently a Galilean woman, and she was not careful with her enunciation of words. And she ended up saying, Amar la shaluchti tuchleich lavya. So we'll say, so shaluchti is a nonsensical word. If you look at Rashi says over here, Ta achlech lechalba, hayserot zalem arboy vaochli chaylev, ve'inu mefresh eslach tok tevo, zumizu, lashmiya kol tevo, tevo, mitzitravs. So we'll say what happened is she didn't stop in between her words, and instead just mentioned words in blocks. So what ended up happening is, va'amar nami shluchti bekaf, ve'yserot zalem ar shalufti bebeis. So we'll say ultimately, and she wanted to say shalufti. Shalufti means my friend. She said shluchti. Shluchti is just a nonsensical word. Furthermore, again, she wanted to say, ultimately again, Ta'uchleich, come and eat. Ta'uchleich chalva, come and eat with me fat. And instead she ended up saying, Tuchleich lavya, a lion should eat you. A lion should eat you. So what started as a beautiful invitation to eat some schmaltz ended up with a klala that go a lion should eat you. Which was such an incredible musar as well. How many times does it happen that people mean to say one thing, but yet others hear something dramatically different? And how careful you have to be in life, not just with what you say, but ultimately, again, try to anticipate to the best of your abilities what others are going to hear. Hahi asisa ta'asa kame didaina. So I'll say there was a woman who came before the judge. Amrle, mari kiri tifla havisli, the ganvuch min. So we'll say, so again, it's just another example of a woman who was not careful with her words. So what she wanted to say was, there was a beam that was stolen from me. Instead, what she said was, Mari kifli tifla, the havizev gan vuch min. She said, I was stolen from you. Vikadu haviz, tikad shadju le iluya lo mati karecha ara. And when they asked her how tall the beam was, she said it would have been tall enough that had you been hanged from it, your feet would not reach the ground. Then I will say, now that's not exactly a good illustration of how tall the beam was, but again, another example of how a woman wasn't careful with her lashon. Amsa de Beirav, so let's listen to this. The maidservant of Rebbe, Amsa de Beirav, ki ava mishtoi belashon chachma. So let's listen to this. So we'll say, so now what we've begun to see is that in Yehuda they were makbid with the way they spoke, not just legabe learning, but in general in life. In the Galilee, they were not careful with the way they spoke. But now, Blessed, we're going to see that sometimes speaking in nuance is actually a good thing. So I'm said the Bay Rebbe. So we'll say, the Gemara talks a lot about Rebbe's maidservant, who was a very pious woman. Not only was she a pious woman, but she clearly also ruled the house. So watch this. Kevin Mishtai Balashan Chachma Amrahachi. So we'll say, she used to speak in nuance, Lashon Chachma. And she would say as follows, Nikvis Bekad Yedun Nishira Lekanehun. Ultimately, it was when the students were at the house of Rebbe, and she wanted them to leave, so she would say to them, ultimately again, she would say to them, Alice, Shem Kli Shedolim Bo Yaimin Achavus Alan Kos. As well, she would say to them as follows, I lost the place. Alus nafkis bekad, which literally means the ladle is hitting the side of the barrel. Yot un nishayre lekoneon. Let the eagles go back to their nest. So we'll say the ladle hitting the side of the barrel meant we're out of wine. Time to go home. Right? You're right, the barrel of wine is done. Time for the eagles, a reference to Talmid Chacham, to go back to their nest. The kat havas by the lace one. When she wanted the Talmidim to stay, she would say, Hava Amalahu, Ya'adi Basar Chavra Mine, Vitas Kafi Allah Bekat Kilfa Da Azla Biyama. A friend follows her friend, which Abu says is a reference to the fact, or a piece follows its friend, which is, even though we finished this barrel, we'll pull out the cork of the stopper from another barrel, and the ladle will float on the water on the barrel like a boat floats on the water, which was a reference to everyone could stay at the table because we'll bring out another barrel of wine. So again, this is a little bit different because here, Amsa de Beir Rebbe realized she did not want to be disrespectful to tell Talmid Chacham to go home. But at the same time, sometimes it was closing time, right? Sometimes the Rebbe needed the Talmidim to go. But she said it in a very nuanced way, right? The ladle sitting the side of the had it sitting in the barrel, it's time for the eagles to go back. But when it was time to stay, again, she said, so she wanted to give proper covet, proper derech eretz to Talmid Chacham, but at the same time wanted to make the point. Rabbi Yossi bar Asin kevin mishtai balashon chachma. Amr, he would say, Rabbi Asen, this is actually a little bit different over here. Rabbi Yossi bar Asen, when he would also speak in nuance, he would say as follows. Amr, also the shor b'mishpat b'tor miskein. Literally, again, make me a shor in mishpat in a poor mountain. So we'll say this was a reference. If you look at Rashi, shor mishpat is tradin tor din shor tor mishpat din. So we'll say this was a pile of, or a serving of beets with mustard. So we'll say, so he would use this nuance. I'm saying this is a little bit different. This was that Rabbi Yossi did not want people knowing what he was eating. So therefore, when he would ask for food, he would ask for it in a lashon chachma. So we'll say, so the logic behind this, the Rashi points out, is because there's a concept of being private about the elements of your lifestyle. Because we'll say, you know, what you spend your money on or how you live or what you eat, those are things that a person should really be a bit more private about for a simple reason. Whether a person has an extravagant lifestyle or a different person, just certain elements of your own personal lifestyle do not need to be there. As well say, it's very striking. I always found it always strange how people, you know, post all types of things. They'll post what they're eating for lunch, or they'll post a picture of their hamburger, or they'll post this. So antithetical to Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit, I will say, it operates under the concept, the precept of tznius. And tznius is not just about how you dress, but tznius is about your lifestyle. So the details of how you live, the details of your lifestyle, are yours and yours alone. So you see over here, even when ordering his food, he used a veiled lashon. I don't have to share everything with anyone. The katavashal bush biza, and when he would ask about the lodging, right, the lodging or the service of a particular inn, amar hachi, you would say, gavar pum din chai mazetova. Is the mouth of this person alive? How good that is. So we'll say, so when he would ask about the inn, the service of the inn, again, he would ask it in a veiled way. Now this is another issue, because often inns were run by women. So therefore, I will say, because it's not sanua to explicitly ask about the welfare, right? How was this innkeeper? He was nervous that it would lead to something inappropriate. Therefore, halacha lamaisa, he asked in a very veiled way. We'll have to stop over here. I apologize. We'll pick up, and we have plenty of time tomorrow. Mirat Hashem, more beautiful agarata tomorrow. I will say, yasher koyach. With clarity. So you see over here, the clarity goes two ways. Sometimes clarity means being explicit. Sometimes clarity means nuance. Because when clarity, being explicit, would yield something negative, then ultimately you have to be nuanced. So what it really means is you have to be measured in your speech. And sometimes being measured means being explicit. Sometimes being measured means being nuanced. Incredible Yisod. What is that right? True also.